Welcome to the ClearAdmit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, December 7th, 2020. I'm joined by Alex Brown. Alex, how are things?
Very good, thank you, Graham.
So before we get started, I need to tell everyone that's listening to rate and review this podcast. You made fun of me last week because I waited till the very end of the episode to mention it, and you were like, maybe no one's listening at this point. So I'm asking now, obviously, if you can remember whatever platform you're listening on, if they allow you to give us a rating, please do so. That just helps other people to discover this podcast. But with that out of the way, Alex, what's going on? Because I think we're now in the throes of one of the sort of crazy time periods in the MBA admissions season. So what's been going on?
Yeah, I mean, we're in what we call internally in the firm decision weeks. As I probably sure I mentioned last week's episode. And last week, three top programs released decisions. London Business School was the first out of the gate, basically, at the beginning of last week. And then that was backed up with Booth and Ross with their round one decisions. So, which is really great for us, you know, personally, because we get a lot of activity on Livewire, and it's great to see the engagement and people's questions. And, you know, and one thing I really like about the platform, quite honestly, Graham, is people's willingness to share.
Yeah.
And that's just absolutely fantastic. This week, we're going to see a lot of decisions roll out if things go according to schedule. Right at the very top of the list has got to be Harvard and Stanford. They're scheduled to release decisions on Thursday. And what that essentially means is Harvard will release decisions on Thursday. That's their process. But Stanford will likely start releasing those decisions earlier in the week via phone call. So while schools have these decision release deadlines, many of those schools actually start to call the admitted candidates a day or two or three in advance because they like that personal connection. Whereas where Harvard sort of stands out is they like to say, we're going to release decisions at a certain time. You're going to know exactly when that is, and we'll release them all at the same time. So the advantage of that is sort of reducing the anxiety of the candidate. But along with Harvard and Stanford, we've got Tuck, Emory, Kellogg, Darden, Tepper, Yale, Said, and ISA, and probably one or two more that I neglect to mention. So it should be a really super busy week this week.
Yeah, and I love seeing people post when they get this news. I love that, you know, then people can give it a thumbs up because we have that like feature. And so it's just nice to see people, you know, congratulating each other and sharing in the news. People also share their, you know, rejection notices. And I think that's cool too, because there's a lot of encouragement there. People are kind of saying, hey, you know, better luck next time, or wow, you had a great profile, I'm sure you'll get in somewhere else. So yeah, it's a nice community, and I love that people are sharing. Speaking of Livewire, Alex, we were actually, you're not going to believe this, but we were in the Wall Street Journal twice last week in two different articles. One of the articles was about, well, they're kind of both about how this year is going to be tough to get into a top school. And I just thought it was really cool. The first article used Livewire to sort of figure out that there were fewer interview invitations issued this year versus last, and more rejections given out early in the cycle, and kind of comparing the 2 years. So it seems like we have the makings of a tough year. And then the second article was just about what's your strategy if it's a tough year. And I actually was fortunate enough to be quoted in that article. So very cool. ClearAdmit in the Wall Street Journal. Always nice to see. And to see them looking at Livewire for data, a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely fantastic. I mean, the Wall Street Journal is the Wall Street Journal. So fair play and well done for getting your name in there, Graham. That's quite quite good. I admire that.
In other news, we've been doing some Real Humans. We continue this. I guess this week was like a West, or last week, I guess it was like a West Coast edition of Real Humans, because we ran both Berkeley, Haas, and Stanford Real Humans. So they're really cool profiles of current students there. You can find out what it's been like for them attending business school. And then we've been publishing all these employment report summaries as the schools come out, you know, and the numbers look pretty good. Although I do want to caution that I think a lot of these numbers are kind of pre-pandemic numbers. You know, a lot of those offers were made last fall for people who graduated this past spring. So I think we won't know much about the true impact of COVID on the job market for MBA candidates until the next year's reports. But in any event, for now, schools seem to be holding their ground. In any event, yeah, what do you make of that? Are you in agreement with me? Do you think we're going to see a bit of fallout in the next kind of employment reports that come out next year?
I can't disagree with you, Graham. You run the company and I work for you. How about that?
Uh-oh, yeah. But in all seriousness, yeah, it'll just be interesting to see. I'm hoping that the vaccine comes into play and that there's a economic recovery well en route to sort of, so we don't see a big dip with respect to career outcomes for MBA folk. The other thing I wanted to mention, Alex, before we move on and talk about our wiretaps candidates for this week, is that we're doing a webinar, which is it's actually about diversity in leadership, and it's with some folks from UNC. And it basically, we've got Danielle Ritchie, who's the admissions director over there, as well as like a panel with, there's a faculty member from UNC named Elizabeth Dickinson. There's going to be a full-time MBA student, and I believe even an alum is going to join. And it's going to be all about how is like UNC facilitating important discussions and practicing inclusion, and how can you get insights on how an MBA is helping, you know, to kind of prepare students to become stronger leaders. And so I want everyone to kind of take note of that. I've now lost my notes, but I believe it's, I want to say it's on the 9th of December. I'll find it as we go through the show today. But yes, you can sign up for that in advance, and it should be a really interesting panel. So definitely take part in that. Alex, anything else from you before we dive in with our wiretaps portion of the show?
No, I think we should kick on.
All right. Okay, so this is wiretaps candidate number one. So this person is applying to 6 schools. However, they don't, I guess, I know they're going to start next fall, looks like. So they've got Emory, Michigan, Ohio State, Stanford, Washington Foster, and UT Austin on the list. And this person's a military officer, and the GRE score is a 320, GPA 3.23. And they have 14 years of work experience, currently located in Europe. And I think they don't, they're actually a sponsored student, so they're going to go back to the military after business school. And so for post-MBA location, they kind of put not applicable because they don't probably get to say exactly where it will be. So the way that this works is that they've been selected to attend a full-time MBA program and to be sponsored, but they have to matriculate fall 2021. And so I know there was some back and forth. I know they have some concerns about maybe lackluster numbers and like how high they should aim and, you know, the amount of work experience. But I wanted to get your take. I did also want to share that demographically, this candidate is a woman. She's LGBT, and mentioned that that's going to be evident to the admissions teams because of her extracurricular experiences. And so just kind of wondering if she wanted a gut check on her school list. And I just wanted to get your point of view. I mean, this is an unusual candidate in a number of respects, and not the least of which is that 14 years of work experience.
Yeah, nearly every respect, I would say, Graham, which can play well in her favor or could backfire. It depends sort of in terms of the approach of the application. I mean, I'm just going to read a little bit here, Graham. She left an extensive note, which is really helpful to us, but it certainly helps sort of share the story of her application. She says, "I have a really interesting job right now where I work directly with industry on behalf of my branch and travel extensively representing my branch in countries across Africa, Europe, and the Middle East." She's a military officer. I got to think that she has some fantastic experience, Graham. And typically, military officers do have terrific experiences. We know that. But I got to say that this sounds super, super interesting. So that should play very well, I would think, in the admissions process. Obviously, if she frames it correctly. Being sponsored is also very helpful. I would say, obviously, it takes a bit of pressure off the career management side of the experience. But being sponsored with having 14 years of experience, one thing that I think we brought this up in the comments, it's going to be super important for this candidate to show how she will fully engage in the MBA experience. Because if you're fully sponsored and you know where you're going afterwards and you're a little bit old, maybe you've got some other things going on in your life during the time you're doing the MBA, it can be easily interpreted by the ADCOM to think, well, this person is just going to go to the classes, get some results in the classes and really not fully participate. So I want to make sure, and she did actually make sure clear in the comments when we raise this issue, that she has to come across as someone that's going to be super engaged in the full MBA experience. I think that will be very important. So as long as she overcomes that issue, Graham, I think that would be very helpful. She's got a 3.23 GPA, so I was a little bit concerned that that's a little on the lower side. Taking the HBS Core or whatever that program is called, HBS Core, she's done that. She's completed it with honors. Fantastic. Her GRE is okay. It's not outstanding. But neither is she really targeting the very top schools, obviously, except Stanford. And we know Stanford is absolutely at the very top. But she's sort of, most of her schools are in the range of sort of top 16, top 20. I would suggest that maybe she identifies maybe another M7 and another top 16 to really sort of flesh out that target range. But yeah, if she overcomes the fact that she's 14 years of experience, Graham, I think that's the biggest hurdle right there. She makes a real good sort of case for that fit. I think this is M7 top 16 quality for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Because the numbers don't speak to that necessarily. You know, they're kind of below average for these very top schools. But then, like you point out, she's got really interesting work experience and a landing place after business school. So, you know, an admissions officer's fear when you take someone with like 14 years of work experience, and you see these candidates every year, is that they're like, oh, I'm going to become an investment banker or a strategy consultant. And so suddenly this 35-year-old or whatever is applying for these kind of jobs, and you know, the banks and the consulting firms, I mean, I don't want to say they're ageist, but it can come into play where they're like, gee, you know, we're going to work you, you know, 80 hours a week. And you know, it's like, it just doesn't always match. Like, it's sometimes it's harder to do a career shift late in your career or even mid-career like this, right? So I think the fact that she has a landing place after business school kind of puts that to rest, you know, so that's good. I do worry that the numbers may not add up for the very top, but I agree with you that right now she has kind of, there's this big gap between Stanford and the rest of the schools on her list in large part. And so, yeah, I think throwing one or two in that sit in the middle there would be smart. I did want to mention that I thought it was great. I'll just quote this. She said, one piece of advice that was given on a Clear Admit podcast really struck me, and that is, if you're not getting rejections, then you're not aiming high enough. And so I think that's where Stanford comes from on her list. So that's kind of nice to see that she's following that advice, but I worry that maybe it's too, like, maybe she needs something, like you're saying, in the middle there, another M7 or whatever. So, but yeah, very interesting case.
And that advice is absolutely spot on, Graham, unless you're getting admitted at Harvard, Stanford and Wharton. So you're right at the very top of the applicant range. If you've applied to schools and you've got admitted across the board, that's great, but did you really aim high enough? So that's good advice. But it's kind of the same advice, like in the MBA application itself, oftentimes business schools are asked, talk to us about a time that you made a mistake or something went wrong. And you'll get some candidates thinking, well, you know, I've never made a mistake. How do I address this? I'm perfect, this, that, and the other. And my answer to that is, if you've never made a mistake in your life, again, you've not tried hard enough. You've not pushed yourself out of your comfort zone. And again, that's what business schools are looking for. Those folks that really have pushed the boundaries a little bit. And if you have made a mistake or whatever, just make sure you've learned from it and you articulate that in your applications. It's a little bit of a different example, but nevertheless, make sure in terms of your application strategy, you do aim high enough. That's very important.
Agreed. Yeah. All right. So interesting candidacy. I wish her the best of luck and appreciate that. Yeah. You know, it sounds like she's been listening to the podcast and taking our advice on board. So,
And like we talk about, would you like to sit down and have a beer with this candidate or a cup of coffee, depending on your beverage of choice? And again, with the types of work experience she's portraying, I'm like, absolutely, I want to learn more. I bet there's some really interesting stories to be told.
Yeah, agree. Could not agree more. So best of luck to her. Let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this person has four schools on the target list. Those schools are HEC Paris, Imperial, INSEAD and London Business School. So this person has a largely European, it's kind of the Euro-focused batch of schools. They want to start in the fall of 2022. So this is an early candidate who's got some time. Pre-MBA career has been, they've been working as a business analyst for a big five bank in Toronto, Canada. And they want to get into consulting after business school. The GRE score in this case is a 325, GPA a 2.64. This candidate will have 4 years of work experience at matriculation. And again, located in Toronto, hoping to maybe go to Europe, but they're also open to the US, it sounds like, or maybe even to adding some US schools to their list. And just a couple other tidbits of information. This person's thinking of maybe taking the GRE again to boost that 325 even higher. And they mentioned that their GPA is from a major in econ, where they had a minor in stats from a university in Canada. And they realized that their GPA is low. They had some family issues and overall immaturity that factored into that GPA. And they're wondering if they what they should do, like take a class, what might help to kind of fix this, if you will. They also mentioned that they are a South Asian female, born in one country, brought up in another, and then moved to Canada. So they've been, you know, in several countries in their life. And they mentioned that in the long term, they want to run their own company, providing reg tech solutions for fintech companies that operate globally. So Alex, what do you make of this candidate? This is kind of, again, an unusual profile. They have some time to work on their background and kind of get their strategy in line. But what do you make of them?
Yeah, I mean, this is a tough one, isn't it? And I'll just repeat a comment that she articulated in ApplyWire when responding to another community member. Yes, it's really frustrating to have this GPA lurking in the dark while working to strengthen my overall application, and so on and so forth. So clearly that the Achilles heel of this candidacy is this 2.64 GPA. As we talked before we came on air, Graham, you suggested obviously that there's much less grade inflation in Canada versus some other parts of the world, in the US. So we have to bear that in mind. But let's say this is the one blemish of an overall a fairly decent, I think a good candidacy. What should she do? She's got a year to fix stuff. I think she's applying next season. That's right, Graham, right?
Yep.
So she has a GRE of 325, which is very respectable. So well done there. Not exactly sure what number that translates to the GMAT, but that definitely puts this candidate in play if we were only looking at the test scores. She's talked about taking a stats class. That's very good. I would suggest, Graham, that she needs to take two or three classes and really ratchet that side of it up over the next year to really show that she's committed now and academically motivated. She does have CFA level one. I know that that's more of a professional designation, but it shows a little bit more commitment and motivation, I think, which again was one of the issues during her undergrad. So I think, and she suggested she might even retake the GMAT, GRE, Graham. So
yeah,
if she retook the GRE, right, let's say she comes back with a 328 or something, that's very good. Takes three, let's say overall three classes, get straight A's, has that CFA designation level one. Is that enough, Graham, to put her in the picture at some of these top schools?
I think so. I think obviously if you look at her list, there is a range. I mean, I think Imperial is probably, you know, on the margin easier to get into than say INSEAD, right? So she has a bit of a range there. I think that, you know, she's going to have to work her butt off over the coming year to take those few classes. And I think she also needs to look carefully at her transcripts from undergrad and see, like, what are the classes that would be most helpful? Because, you know, you don't want to just take the same stuff necessarily, but you also need to be taking, like, foundational classes. And since she was an econ and stats kind of focused undergrad, there may be less wiggle room. But, I mean, I don't know if she's done calc or accounting or what makes sense. But it would be good to show recent academic excellence beyond just the high, you know, GRE score. So the other thing, though, is that I want to, there's one other piece of this candidacy that I wanted to ask you about. She mentioned that, you know, she's been at her current firm for a little while and is in line for a promotion. And remember, she'll have 4 years total work experience by the time she starts business school. So she has like another year plus to work, and it sounds like she's going to be promoted. But she also may have a bead on another job with a new firm, potentially with greater responsibility and stuff. And so do you have a point of view on like what one should do in that instance? Because that's an important, you know, point here where, like, yeah, what, which way does she go there?
Yeah, it's a very interesting question. So let's say in a year's time, she's quitting, right? Or a year and a piece, whether it's her current role or her new role. So there's no sense of being overly committed to the current role because eventually you're going to quit anyway. So I think basically it all boils down to, over the next year, which of the two opportunities, stay in the current firm with the promotion or move to a new firm with a bigger promotion, which of the two roles over the next year will present this candidate with the best opportunities to grow, to learn, to have interesting experiences? And probably only the candidate will know best how to assess the differences in those two roles. So there's never a right answer to this, I don't think, Graham. It's not like, well, you have to take the higher promotion with the different firm, because there's going to be a learning curve with the new firm, right? So you're going to, is that learning curve going to be take 2 or 3 months to get up to speed? And then you start really gaining ground. And maybe if you stayed in the same firm, you would continue to gain ground over the next year. So there are variables involved, no right answer, but absolutely think about, over the next year, which of the two opportunities presents you personally with the best opportunity to grow, to learn, to take on experiences that are going to create these stories that you're going to be able to use in your MBA candidacy. Back to you, Graham. I mean, obviously, you can share your thoughts on this particular question, but I'll throw one final question back to you. If this candidate was to add 1 or 2 US-based programs to her mix, having also done the 3 classes, gotten straight A's, retaken the GRE and bumped it up even more, which 1 or 2 programs in the US would you point her towards?
Oh, good one. And I think what's interesting is that's a perfect segue, because she mentioned how she wants to go into consulting in the short term, but that in the long term, she wants to use technology to help fintech companies understand regulatory differences across the globe, right? Which is complicated, right? There's a ton of regulation in the financial markets, and it differs country to country. And so I could see how there's a market for what she wants to get into. But I didn't understand really how the short term fits with the long. And so I'm going to focus on the long term because I think it's more interesting, it's niche, it's unique, and it fits with what she's been doing to date as well as her undergraduate focus. So my view is that with that in mind, I would start to think about, gee, you know, there's some pretty good finance offerings in the U.S. at schools ranging from, you know, NYU and Columbia, Wharton, Chicago, Cornell. I mean, there are a number of schools that are quite strong. MIT has a lot of fintech stuff happening. So I think she would need to do some due diligence, but I do think she could add, you know, some of those types of schools. Although, again, this all assumes that she can get over that GPA hurdle, which I'm hoping she can. As to your other question, I'm one to play things more conservative with the job stuff. So my view is, if she's happy in her current role, is slated for a promotion, and feels like that's going to be quite stable until she would go off to school, that might be for the best. I always worry, like, if she's going to jump to a new job, imagine it doesn't work out, or they're working her to the bone and she doesn't have time to apply to business school because she's trying to prove herself in a new role. Or worst case, something goes, you know, doesn't work out and she's out on the street. Suddenly, like, everything kind of falls apart a little bit on the professional side. So I guess I would say, if she thinks the new job and new company is a huge opportunity and is going to be fantastic, by all means, go for it, like you said. But if she has any doubts, like, I think sticking with your, you know, one employer heading off into business school is no big deal. I mean, people don't, that's not a negative, right, to have been at one company the whole time. So that's my take on her. Anything else you wanted to add, though?
Yeah, I guess she's into this cryptocurrency stuff, right? Bitcoin and stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's mumbo jumbo to me. But yeah, it sounds very, very interesting.
Yeah, and I will say the reason that we did talk about her candidacy is because a community member actually wrote in the comments, they said, I hope this gets featured on the podcast. I'm sure it would provide a lot of value to people with similar conundrums. Good luck to the poster. And they point out that this person still has another year to make some improvements on their profile, and that could make a big difference. So anyway, best of luck to her. It's just nice to see that encouragement from the community on the site.
Yeah, and I'll just summarize one point here, Graham, and we've said this on several occasions, but it's worth repeating for those that don't listen on a regular basis. If you have academic issues that you're trying to overcome, there are two things that ADCOM are looking at. They're looking at, firstly, do you have the academic chops to do well in our program, right? So you have to overcome that. And frankly, if you've got a high test score, you're going to be able to prove that. But the more important thing is, do you have the motivation when you're spreading yourself thin with extracurricular activities and career management and lots of other things? Do you have that motivation to also do well? And that's where having the lower GPA becomes a real sort of burden to the candidacy. And that's why you've got to have that high test score, but you've also have got to have been proactive and taken these extra classes and say, look, this is me now. I'm highly motivated and I've done X, Y, and Z over the last year or whatever it is to demonstrate that.
Yeah, well said. And I think, yeah, I fully believe that this candidate's capable of taking the steps that are needed to improve her candidacy and get into a good school. So best of luck to her. I did promise I'd tell everyone when this webinar on diversity and inclusion is going to take place. And that is December 9th at 12 p.m. Eastern. So mark that on your calendars. You can sign up on the clearadmit.com website. Let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number three. So this person is applying to four schools. They want to start business school next fall. They've got Carnegie Mellon, SMU Cox, UNC Kenan Flagler, and UVA Darden on their list. This candidate is also in the military. So we have two military folks this week. Post-MBA, they're envisioning a role in consulting or tech. They have a 680 on the GMAT and a 3.26 GPA, 3 years of work experience thus far. This candidate is located in South Korea, and in, you know, post-MBA, they're hoping to land in the U.S. They seem to have a slight preference for either the Northeast or the South, and they mentioned in their notes that they're a logistics officer in the U.S. military, and they've been stationed in South Korea for 3 years now. They think of the MBA as a great way to kind of facilitate a transition into the business sector. And, you know, they mentioned, look, I've got a Reach school in Darden, Target is Tepper, and Safeties are Cox, and they have another school that they didn't disclose here that they're going to look at. That's where they went to undergrad. So they're, you know, this is an interesting candidate as well. I should mention, they said, quote, I love the podcast, listen to every episode, and it's been immensely helpful in the application process. So that warms our hearts to hear. But Alex, what do you make of this candidate? Because for me, the numbers don't jump off the page, but they have a kind of a reasonable list of target schools and a pretty interesting background. So what do you make of this candidate?
I think the point that you raised again before we came on air is worth repeating. I mean, this candidate has a 680 GMAT and a 3.26 GPA. So the statistics are not awful. They're just on the lower end of the range for the very top schools.
Right.
And this candidate is not applying to the very top schools. You articulated their Reach school is a top 16. And then their targets are more in that sort of top 20 range. So, Graham, if this candidate retook the GMAT and got a 720, As an example, I'm not saying that they are capable of necessarily getting a 720, but let's say they were able to prepare harder, prepare longer, they came back with a better test score. Your point is maybe they're not aiming high enough.
Yeah, I guess I think what we talked about before we came on air is I was like, whoa, what would you think of this candidate if they had a 730 on the GMAT? And I think we both were like, wow, you know, 3 years of work experience in South Korea, military. They have a big background in operations and logistics, which we know that MBA hiring companies really like. You know, so Amazon's always looking to pick up some operations and logistics folks, and other companies too, right? So it's, yeah, on the one hand, I'm like, wow, this person might want to take a flyer on a very top school. They might also think about, you know, I know they're probably racing in the coming weeks to get applications in for round two. But they might want to disclose in their optional essay that they're not satisfied with that 680 and they're going to retake the test, and we'll furnish schools with a score as soon as they have it. And there are a lot of routes one can take, but I do think that a higher test score could move the meter. Now, it's also very possible that, you know, they're happy with where they are and they're going to apply to this batch of schools and get into a couple of them. So they no, nothing's forcing them to even aim higher or something. But I just, I couldn't help but think when I saw this profile, wow, international experience, military, I mean, there's so many things to like here that I thought, wow, it's just those numbers, you know, it's a combination of a sort of, like you said, slightly below, you know, kind of bottom of the range for these top schools numbers. And so, yeah, that's what jumped out at me.
Yeah. And, you know, as you say, maybe these programs are appropriate for this candidate. They are all very good programs. They're just not the very, very best that's around. And this candidate possibly could be attractive to a couple of those M7 programs. We do know admissions folks like military folks. Each of these programs will have veterans clubs. Mm-hmm. Reach out to those veterans clubs, get advice, get guidance from those folks. And again, reach out to a couple of veterans clubs at the M7 programs. See what they think. See if they think that you that you would fit into to their program. But yeah, a US military guy, I think it's male. I don't know if we know that actually, Graham. But anyway, the point is, they might be undershooting a little bit. Obviously, it will depend on the specific experience and stuff like that. You can't just say, well, I'm US military in operations, got 3 years of experience, and AGCOM automatically says, well, that's absolutely fantastic. Right. So it will depend on the specific experience. But AGCOM is fairly familiar with the military folks, and typically military folks do well in this process. So, yeah, I think maybe if they have that opportunity to retake the GMAT, might be worthwhile. And also, the other thing to note, Graham, when are they applying? Oh, maybe they are applying this season. So, yeah. So, they apply in round two. Obviously, it's crunch time now. You've got to get the apps in. All app deadlines are sort of beginning of January. Don't delay to round three. Get that stuff in round two for sure. But if you are retaking the GMAT and you can't get that done till the back end of January, absolutely adopt that strategy and put it in the optional essay.
Yeah, the one thing I was going to ask you is, you know, I know that Darden has a GMAT waiver, and then there's some other schools like MIT, Michigan, that are kind of, you know, they have waiver processes or test optional for this season because of the pandemic. Do you have any thoughts on, like, should someone, you know, kind of apply and just not submit a test score if their test score is below, you know, the kind of average? Or do you think if you've got the score, you got to use it?
Yeah. Well, I think when you've got a 3.26 GPA, you got to use a test score.
Yeah, ideally. Yeah.
I mean, you know, if this person had an above average GPA, maybe you could game the situation a little bit. I'm not a fan of anyone gaming any situation in this regard, because I just think it's not good. Because obviously, at the end of the day, AGCOM wants to admit people that behave well, right? Because we want good actors in this world. But yeah, the GMAT is slightly below average. It's probably at average or above average of some of the schools that they're targeting, actually. But also, the GPAs are in that exact same range. So it's not like one is very much different to the other. The fact they're doing MBA math is also very good.
Yeah, that's true. They've taken those steps. And I think, you know, again, I think this person's going to get in somewhere. I did want to encourage them to think carefully about their goals and what types of firms might hire them heading out of business school. Because I just think having a good kind of career plan in mind is also helpful as part of your application strategy. And so I think, you know, whatever fits with what they've done to date, which has been a lot of logistics and operations, might be most palatable for the admissions teams and stuff. But in any event, this person, you know, very interesting profile. And I think all the candidates this week, we had a bit of, you know, military focus, but also, you know, everyone has their weakness, whether it's a GPA or a GMAT score or some issue to tackle. And so that was good to cover. Alex, as always, you've done brilliant work picking these out. I don't know how you're going to top yourself next week. I did want to mention that with all these decisions coming in, we're probably going to start looking at some decision wire entries, particularly the undecided entries where someone's like, oh, I ran the table at Harvard, Stanford, Booth, and Wharton and, you know, don't know where to go. You know, and so then we often chime in on those and give people advice based on their career plans. So if you are listening and you end up with some positive decisions and don't necessarily know where you want to attend, you can post a decision wire and include your acceptances, et cetera. And then we feature those on the podcast. Usually starting at around this time of year or in the next week or two, we'll start to feature a couple of those or at least one a week. And then we'll take a break from it and come back to it in the spring when there are more decisions again. So I'm looking forward to that. We haven't done those in a little while, Alex.
Yeah, no, absolutely brilliant. Just the last comment I'm going to make on this last candidate, actually. As a military person with operations experience and logistics, quite frankly, COVID-19 has wrecked supply chains and logistics operations of many big firms. So I imagine there'll be lots of opportunity and roles for these types of military candidates. We know military candidates do well in that operations environment. It's if you were to stereotype a military candidate, they ultimately go into operations. In the long run, they become a chief operations officer.
Yeah, that's fair. We do see a lot of that happening. So yeah, very good point though. And a nice note to end on. I think, yeah, there's clearly a lot to like here, and I appreciate them sharing their profile. So Alex, I'll let you decide when we start filtering in any Decision Wire posts into these episodes, but everyone stay tuned for next week's edition. We'll be back in 1 week's time. So Alex, thanks again, and we'll see you in a week, I guess.
Very good. Thank you, Graham, and everybody, please stay safe. Good luck.